Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hour number 2, Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Row, Nick Keezer here with you. We'll be joined by Ben McKee from GoVols 24/7 coming up at 7:30. We'll get into all things Tennessee with him. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock. Taking your thoughts right now on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Joe, today is a very important day in the draft process for the Tennessee Titans. Number one, we are now officially 1 month away from the draft, thankfully, mercifully, 1 month away from the NFL draft. And today is Cam Ward's pro day down in Miami. So Cam Ward is throwing today. He did not throw at the NFL Combine, nor did Shedeur Sanders. And he talked about having 5 years of film as one of the reasons why he did not throw at the NFL Combine. He will throw today. I would imagine the Titans are going to have a very large contingent down in Miami watching Cam Ward make throws. By the way, I think if you're interested in, like, you know, watching that, I think it's this afternoon at 3 o'clock Central Time, and it's going to be on the NFL Network, so make sure
keep that
in mind. So you can watch that, I believe, if you are so inclined. But, Joe, I would imagine today, if you're the Titans, like, you've already met with him a couple times, you had him into your facility, you've watched the film at this point, so you've got as big of a baseline as you're going to get on him to this front. And I guess today on the pro day front, you're trying to confirm what you think you've seen to this point in camp. Like, I don't think he's like, I doubt very seriously they're learning much new information about Cam Ward at his pro day today.
So, not to nitpick Cam Ward, future Nashville sports star, but if you got 5 years of film, why are you throwing today?
I don't know.
I mean, you got 5 years of film. You know, just let the 5 years of film stand. Now, a lot of, you know, obviously, like quarterbacks, they like this better because it's people they're for the most part, you know, going to be throwing to guys they've been throwing to. I assume all those guys who are draft eligible, who, you know, Restrepo, I assume he'll be catching passes today.
I mean, it's
a showcase for them too. So you got that timing and that chemistry, and that certainly can make a QB look better. So, it's I'm sure Titans brass will be well represented down there. I'm sure a lot of people will be down there. It's interesting because I feel like this pro day 2 weeks ago is a different feel than it is now, where it's like there's just this presumption that the Titans are like no one else is going to get a crack at him anyway, you know. So how many other teams are down there? Are the Giants down there trying to like intimidate the Titans as they watch Cam Ward, you know?
Oh, I'm sure they're down there.
Yeah, I'm sure they're down there too. But I must say, Robbie, I can't recall, and maybe I've just missed this, but like live national TV coverage of pro days. That's definitely.
Oh, I remember one for sure. I remember the Zach Wilson one.
That one
was definitely on TV because he made that crossbody throw. If you're right. Like, oh my goodness, did you see that throw from Zach Wilson? He's going to be an absolute superstar. And who knows, maybe he will be at some point with the Dolphins, but hadn't worked out so far.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, whatever happens today, I mean, I think it's almost like a 40 time. If you really love a player, you just want the 40 time to not be like, oh my gosh, that's a problem, right? So that's really what today is like. Yeah, anybody who gets excited about a quarterback throwing against air, like, yeah, they should be able to throw footballs well. They're like a prospect to be drafted in the NFL, right?
Like, to me, it's more of a story if it doesn't go well, right? Like, if it's exactly. more of a story if, like, Cam Ward just totally screws things up today.
Exactly. It's man bites dog, you know, if it doesn't go. But yeah, otherwise, it's just like run of the mill. Oh, wow. He threw the ball well. No kidding. But it's also when you don't do it at the combine, people want to, they just still want to see it. Let me see that. Let me see that arm, that live arm in action. So I guess I may have to tune in for this now.
Oh, I'll probably watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Just see him out there just slinging the ball around. And in all seriousness, like the Restrepo kid, the more I watch him, the more intrigued I am by him as well. So
He's good.
hopefully he's out there catching passes today. I got one texter that says, "It's not a safe pick, and this could get all these people fired. Isn't the cardinal rule in the draft not to reach for a quarterback?" Mike on the text line, Joe, says, it's a long text, but he's asking how the Titans got to this point. This offseason is Rancarthon 2.0, except for the grossly overspent for an average offensive lineman. 6 weeks ago, nobody was sure that either one of these supposedly top two quarterbacks are worthy of a first-round pick. Certainly not a generational talent. And now they're going to draft a quarterback at one? You trade back, you should be able to get a bonanza from the Giants. Once again, how did they get to this point? This is from Mike on the text line.
Well, that's all fine, Mike, but how do you know the Giants? Why do the Giants think they're generational? Are they giving you a bonanza if they don't think it's a generational talent? I mean, that's right. I mean, you know, if they actually believe that, then okay, maybe you'd have a shot. Maybe you'd have to listen to it. Look, all your, you know, your point about the QB. Anybody talking about the QB? Is this a mistake? Is this fireable? Yeah, absolutely. Also, you know, it could be the one, and it just looks like they are willing to put their chips on the table here that this is the one.
So that question from Mike there kind of leads into the question I have for Titans fans today. And again, we're still missing, I think, probably the most important piece of information from this offseason, which is going to be quarterback. Are the Titans actually going to take Cam Ward at number one? Do they end up trading back, as Mike suggests there on the text line, and picking up some more draft capital, and this year just basically being a wash at the quarterback spot? So we'll see what happens on that front. I think for the sake of this discussion, I'm probably assuming that they're taking Cam Ward at number one. So my question is, like, if you're a Titans fan, in the very early stages of the Chad Brinker, Mike Borgonzi era, and what we've seen from them to this point in free agency, some of the cuts that they've made, some of the guys that they brought in here, what do we make of the strategy? What do we make of the early returns from the Brinker and Borgonzi era? One thing that's clear, Joe, and we've talked about this, they are prioritizing availability. When you factor in the players that they've brought in and some of the players that they've gotten rid of, availability clearly a very big deal to this front office here. And history of availability, trying to project that forward, meaning that these players can be healthy moving forward. Now, sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. I think that's clearly a takeaway from the early part of this with the front office at this point. And then again, assuming that they take Cam Ward, we'll see how they address wide receiver and edge rusher in the draft and in the rest of free agency. But I do detect, Joe, some frustration from Titans fans that they have not been more active on the free agency front to this point.
Yeah, and I understand that. Look, to me, I think you're totally right on the availability thing, and ultimately that should be something that Titans fans like to hear, given all the issues of recent years. Of course, in this league, you know, people who have had availability still end up getting hurt at some point. But I mean, it makes sense. And it also makes sense that Titans fans are sitting there like, this is it. You know, the Carthon 2.0. I would disagree with the texter who said Carthon 2.0. At this point a year ago, they had a bunch of signings in the trade for Snead, and it was like, oh, my goodness, look at the offseason they're having, right? It was a lot of sizzle, didn't end up being a lot of steak. Right now, thank you. Right now, I understand a little bit of impatience or a little bit of anxiety. Like, look at your roster, it's really bad. I'm like, there are going to be more signings. I mean, you know, this is obviously they've decided to, you know, they're going with cheaper guys, and again, probably some more one-year deals to come, and we'll see how those choices are. It's not going to be a lot of excitement. This comes down to me to, you know, the Dan Moore signing is going to be is going to tell the story of this free agent class for sure. And if it turns out they have themselves a solid left tackle, and then everything else falls into place, and Latham flourishes a right tackle and all that, then I mean that's a heck of a way to start, because obviously their offensive line's been so bad, and that would mean that they'd have at least a decent, solid, middling offensive line, which is a huge step forward. But it's also, to me, a huge leap to just assume that based on what we know of him. So that's the bottom line. Obviously, they have other holes to fill. They will sign other guys.
So Cam Ward's got his pro day today, and throwing the question out there for Titans fans, what do we make of the early returns, the early strategy on the Chad Brinker, Mike Borgonzi front for this offseason? Your thoughts on all that coming up next, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 1025, 1063, The Game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is Boomba's Pizza and Watch Bar, just in time for the NCAA tournament. Score half off a $30 gift card and enjoy their award-winning pizza and handcrafted beverages. Visit them in Nashville, Spring Hill, or Murfreesboro. Visit thegamenashville.com/deals. Now while supplies last. Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. Ben McKee will join us here in just over 10 minutes. We'll get into all things Tennessee Vols with him. Taking your thoughts on Cam Ward and the direction of the Titans front office to this point early in the Brinker / Borgonzi era. I got one texter, Joe, that says, apparently the Titans front office forgot that we had no quarterback at the end of last season. They've yet to sign a serviceable quarterback through free agency. Right now, there's no clear-cut starting quarterback available at number one. What are they trying to do? Run it back and be horrible again and pray they get the number one pick again next year? Dustin from Hopkinsville says that, I just think it's a bad move to take a quarterback in a class that no one until recently says is a good QB class. The hype of late for no reason. You trade back, you let Ward get picked up, draft one of the home runs available on Hunter or on the edge, take a shot with a pick that isn't so valuable. I don't know that the opinion on the class as a whole, Joe, has really changed all that much. I just think there's a lot of conversation right now about Cam Ward. And again, if you're the Titans, it doesn't really matter what the overall quarterback class looks like. It's at this point, what's your evaluation on Cam Ward? What's your evaluation on Shedeur Sanders? But yeah, it seems like it's coming down to basically one guy right now with Cam Ward. And what's your evaluation on him?
See, that's what I'm here for, is them just taking Shedeur Sanders on draft night and blowing everybody's mind, having people melt down. TD and I both sit there and say, hey, that was the right move all along. But, I guess I've focused on, again, it's basically the majority of, NFL media, but believes there's a gap between Ward and Sanders. So in my mind, it's Ward, right? I mean, I think that's what it will be, but we'll see. Yeah, and that's the thing. The QB draft class stuff is, I understand that obviously the worst draft class of my memory, which was the one from a few years ago, with Pickett as the top guy in the middle of the first round, there's an example of bad QB draft class, and the results are across the board, pretty much back it up, right?
Yeah.
But again, it's one person. Like, if the other quarterbacks in the draft aren't great and don't go high or whatever, you're picking one person. It just comes down to what you think of that person. And I can look at this, and, it certainly seems like the Titans have kind of talked themselves into this a little bit. Again, that's also us assuming things along the way based on little comments, generational player, we need to get all these top 100 picks, et cetera, et cetera. Those little public comments, we take them too far and then we run with them. But it does seem that way. It seems like Cam Ward, essentially, once the Titans started to get to know him, started to really believe that he could be the guy if this is how it turns out.
I got one texter that says, why does everybody think trading back is as simple as pushing a button? If they trade back for too little, they'll be crying about that as well. Really the one team now that fits that mold would be the Giants. Do the Giants get desperate enough where they're willing to give you an absolute haul for Cam Ward? That's what it comes down to. But I think there have been a lot of people that just assume that the Giants are going to offer some enormous package to the Titans to go try to move up and get Cam Ward. And they may not. We've talked about the idea, would they offer a package that even includes next year's first round pick? If not, then that's probably disappointing to you if you're the Titans trying to look ahead to next season. And again, I keep saying this, and I'll stand by it. Like, to me, if you love Cam Ward and you think he's legitimately your answer at franchise quarterback, then it doesn't really matter what the Giants want to offer you.
Right. You know, maybe they get to the point where they go nuts. I mean, again, I asked this last week with the Karski. It's like, is there an offer you can't refuse? Is there something where it's like, okay, even though the plan has been to do this, guys, do we really want to put our entire careers on Cam Ward
right. Being
that guy? Because right now we can do this. Yes, it's going to be rough next year. And I know Brian Callahan's like, oh, gosh, please don't. But – okay, we got this draft capital. This is a building block situation. I just don't see it happening. I just don't see it happening. And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's as simple as, like you said, like the where they get hosed is the Browns then take Shadur, you know. But again, they may think there's not that big of a gap, and they may be gambling that, you know, the Browns are. I mean, a lot of people seem to think Browns are taking Abdul Carter. No matter what, again, is that real? There's a lot of things where you believe, you know, there's a strong belief that this team is doing this or that, and then it turns out like absolutely not. There was a huge amount of smoke about the Colts wanting Levis,
right?
If you remember, right before the draft, and we know how that turned out. But you know, if that's the case, then the Giants may be like, you know what, Shadur, we have Shadur right there with Cam Ward anyway, so why give up draft capital? I mean, I think the Titans are going to be sitting there, and that's a very good point on the text line. We make it over and over again. Just trade back. Okay, well, who's coming up to get it, and what are they offering us? I don't think there's going to be anything great.
Well, and then to the point that others have brought up on the text line, and look, Kuharski's talked about this too, and I think Kuharski is probably, you know, more open-minded to this than certainly I am when it comes to this draft. But like, what if the plan is to try to trade back, and if you don't, you take like Travis Hunter, and you're just looking at Cam Ward, and you're like, you know, we're just, everything's pointing to them signing Cam Ward, but at the end of the day, they're not sold, and they're committed to looking at the draft process next year at quarterback. Again, if you're Brian Callahan, that sounds like living through hell this next year, and I understand that. But, I mean, Kuharski's throwing it out there that he's still not totally convinced that Cam Ward's going to be their guy at number one. Which sounds awesome to watch next year. It's going to be great.
I will, as much as, yes, it'll be really real. I mean, I don't even know then what you would be talking about at QB. But I'm here for a curveball and taking one of the I'll say it over and over again. I'm walking to the podium. I'm taking Travis Hunter. He's the best player in this draft. He's the player in this draft who's going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Okay, that's my belief. You know, he may end up being someone who plays in the league for 3 years and actually isn't very good at either of the positions people are talking about. But I believe that, so I would do it. But yeah. Like, if you do that, that's where, you know, someone said, I wish they would have, you know, like, signed Winston. And I agree. Like, to me, you sign a quarterback who at least could start for you, like, is a viable starting option, which Brandon Allen isn't. And then I could believe that they're going to do something like that. But it's hard to believe it at this point.
It's hard to believe it at this point. Like, I mean, there's certainly, I mean, I don't think. They're not rolling into next season with Brandon Allen as your starting quarterback. I mean, that would if your goal is to have the number one pick again next year, Joe, then that would probably go a long way towards accomplishing that goal if that's what you did with Brandon Allen as your starting quarterback.
Yeah. Wear socks without starch for Arch? No. We got to come up with something.
Well, I mean, crawl through lava for Iamaliava was pretty good. So that may be one that we got to need Nico to drastically improve this year and be ready to be drafted next year.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah, a year ago, it was like, oh, he's certainly right. He's going to be right up there at the top of the draft. And now who knows? And, of course, Arch probably is going to come out next year. So, but, hey, maybe Carson Beck is about to just absolutely light up the world in Miami.
Maybe so. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll be joined by Ben McKee from Go Vols 24/7 coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Sweet 16 and the Tennessee Vols and the matchup coming up against Kentucky. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Row, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Row, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Row, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. Tennessee punching their ticket to the Sweet 16 over the weekend. They'll be matched up against Kentucky, which is going to be a heck of a week between Tennessee fans and Kentucky fans sniping back and forth at each other. To help us talk more about all that, we head to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome to the program, our friend Ben McKee from Go Vols 24/7. Ben, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Just wrestled with a car seat. Other than that, I'm doing well.
I know how that is, my man. They make these car seats just unbelievably complicated nowadays. There's all these straps and holes and everything that you got to figure out. It's ridiculous.
And you look up the YouTube video on how to do it, and it solves it in like 5 seconds.
It makes you just feel like a complete moron after it's done, too. Yeah, oh, yeah. Done that many times.
Yeah, that's
I never had that issue.
I got an email from Ben. I got an email from Amazon the other day that the car seat that we've recently ordered for my kid just got recalled. There's a recall on it. So got to go find another one now.
It sounds about right. And did they make car seats when Joe was coming up?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. Joe, do you know what we're speaking of?
Well, I mean, we had seat belts, and then, you know, basically I'd roll down the window for the cigarette smoke to leave the car. It was fine. They were fine.
Very well done. So, Ben, obviously a fun weekend to be a Vols fan with Tennessee punching their ticket to the Sweet 16, and then on the women's side, Kim Caldwell doing the same thing. Let's start with Rick Barnes and company here. Just their performance in the tournament to this point, including a particularly dominant second half there against UCLA. What have you made of Tennessee's path to this point to punch their ticket to yet another Sweet 16?
That they're a true Final Four contender. I guess that was maybe the notion going in, but you never really know with Tennessee basketball heading into the NCAA tournament. There's a long, long list of letdowns that my colleagues were even going through last night in the group chat, and some that you just forget about going back to the late 90s and early 2000s. So you never really know with Tennessee basketball until it actually happens. You got to put your cup on if you're a Tennessee fan for the NCAA tournament. And I think this weekend maybe encourages you to believe in this Tennessee basketball team if you're a Tennessee fan. Because they were flat right dominant against Wofford and against UCLA. Obviously, they handled Wofford the way that they should. And then UCLA, it was a first half in which adjustments were needed to be made. And I thought once Tennessee kind of got a feel for what UCLA was doing and navigated those early rounds of the boxing match, I thought they made the proper adjustments and really swarmed UCLA on both sides of the basketball. And when you're playing a 7 seed and a 15 seed and you're a 2 seed and you've beaten Auburn, you've beaten Florida, Alabama, all these other teams that are also worthy of a Final Four, that's how you should play against your opponent. So just the fact that we actually saw it with our eyeballs come to fruition and it just reinforced the fact, to me at least, that Tennessee is a Final Four contender. And I think to get more specific, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with how Chaz Lanier has elevated his play at the best time of year.
No doubt. And Ben, I've crunched some numbers in case you haven't done these yet. And I know you're going to spend a lot of this week talking about those two games, but you mentioned Chaz Lanier, who was incredible in those two games at Rupp. He went there earlier this year, of course, was 0-7. So Lanier, Ziegler, Ganey in those two games, Lanier 3-17 from three, Ganey 2-12 from three, Ziegler 1-13 from three, 6-42 for those three guards in the two Kentucky games. That's 14.3%. And I'm not sitting here saying, you know, well, there you go. You can just write them into the Elite Eight. But I will say, I don't expect that to happen again. First of all, when you look back at those two games, what else stands out in terms of, you know, what may need to change? That's a huge one. And do you feel like with those three guys shooting the way they are now, that just takes this team to another level?
Yes, absolutely. Because what are the numbers of what Tennessee's guards did combined this past weekend against Wofford and against UCLA. The numbers are vastly, vastly different. And Chaz Lanier is a different basketball player today than he was during those first two matchups. He has elevated his game the last month and a half. Really since that, I thought the turning point for Chaz was that Oklahoma game, which I believe was the Saturday before the trip to Rupp. He was impacting the game in more ways than just shooting the basketball. He was rebounding. He was facilitating for his teammates, not to the extent that Zakai Ziegler or Jordan Ganey does, but some of his assist numbers were kind of silly in comparison. Like, I think early on in SEC play, there's a point in time in which Bishop Boswell had as many assists or more assists than Chaz. And that's not the case anymore. Of course, he's not dishing out 7 to 10 a game, but it's like two or three here and there, and he's grabbing 5 rebounds. He's coming up with 2 steals. He's blocking a shot. He's moving better without the basketball. He's not allowing defenses to just consume him. And when they don't give him any breathing room, he just kind of went into a shell. And now he's fighting through these tight defenses and whatnot and finding ways to thrive and still get his shots off and make the shots, most importantly. So I just think Chaz Lanier is a totally different basketball player than he was, especially that first matchup in Knoxville. And then the one in Rupp, I thought, again, that Saturday against Oklahoma, he had a really good performance in Norman where he could not miss in the first half, if I remember correctly. But it wasn't the shooting. It was how he was impacting the game in so many different ways. And you kind of saw that in Rupp as well, even though he had a bad shooting night, as you pointed out, there were still some other things that he was doing to help Tennessee. And it's just been a continual process of growing in terms of being able to affect the basketball game in more areas than just shooting the basketball. So I think Tennessee's guard play is in a much better spot going into this matchup with Kentucky. Zakai Ziegler, that first matchup against Kentucky, that was the game in which he tweaked his knee at the end of the first half, and he did come back and play in the second half, but he did not look like Zakai Ziegler, and I feel like that was a product of the knee. Jordan Ganey's playing the best basketball of his career, I feel like, right now, especially with what he did in Nashville at the SEC tournament. So I just feel like Tennessee's guard play, Jemai Meshack, maybe finding a spot offensively to where he can provide a little bit more than he has up until this point in the season. So the guard play is, I mean, I think that's what's going to win the game for Tennessee. Tennessee did have some issues with their big men. There's no doubt about that they'll need to correct as well. They can't allow as many open threes as they allowed the first couple of games. But the guard play, to me, is what will dictate whether Tennessee wins or not. If it's the guard play that you saw in those first two Kentucky matchups, Tennessee's season ends on Friday night. If it's the guard play that we saw in Nashville and in Lexington this past weekend, I think Tennessee's going to the Elite Eight.
So, Ben, as you're watching this team right now, where do you think Igor Milicic is with his game, and how important is he going to be in determining whether or not this is a team that can break down the door and get to the Final Four?
Yeah, he's really important. I don't know that Tennessee needs him to go score 20 a game with Chaz and Ganey elevating their game of late, but he is somebody, like you saw against UCLA, Tennessee really needed him on the boards, and he delivered. And all the assistant coaches in the locker room after the game and his teammates talked about how going into that matchup, they challenged him and really, really emphasized that, hey, we need you on the glass. If not, we're going to have a hard time winning against this big fellow from Spain who stands at 7'3". And, you know, Igor didn't have the flashiest stat line in the box score. I believe he finished with 7 rebounds or so. But those rebounds were critical. And in teaming up with Kate Phillips and Felix Akpara attacking the glass, they were able to win the battle of the boards. And that was a huge difference in the basketball game. Mick Cronin talked about it afterwards. Rick Barnes talked about it. So I feel the same way about Igor that I do Chaz, especially late January when it was clear that Chaz was still trying to adjust to SEC play. He needed to become more than just a shooter. I think Igor needs to fall in love with that idea as well, that, okay, I can help my team more than just scoring 15 to 20 points a game like we have seen him do at times. If I'm playing solid defense, if I'm rebounding the basketball, if I'm being physical, then that is helping my team win, and the offense will kind of take care of itself. The shots will take care of itself, and he should find comfort in knowing that there's not pressure on him to make shots when Chaz and Ganey and Zakai are making shots like they are. So I think the key for Igor, and I thought he did a better job of this past weekend than he did in Nashville when he really struggled, of just finding other ways to impact the basketball game, and I think that's helping him open up his overall game a bit more.
Yeah, no, I thought he was just the way he fought some of those rebounds was a big deal in that game. 20 boards between those three guys, that you'll take that for sure. So you mentioned, the bigs, Ben, matching up. Kobe Brea got loose in both games and got some good looks. So Amari Williams obviously is, he's a really like their half-court catalyst in a lot of cases for that five-out offense. What is the what's the best matchup for him? I know Okparo's probably going to have to guard him a fair amount, but is Cade Phillips a guy who, can go out there and you think, give him a different look and maybe make things a little more difficult on him?
Yeah, I think that's a great point that I actually was not thinking about. I was thinking Igor Milicic when you first started asking the question, and then you bring up Cade, and I immediately go back to early in the season. I think it was during non-conference play. It might have been early in SEC play. Rick Barnes talked about how they think Cade Phillips can be the next Jemai Meshack. Maybe not in terms of being a finalist for Naismith Defensive Player of the Year, but in terms of the versatility and really being a lockdown defender, of being able to defend the four, the five, and then being able to step out on the perimeter and guard a guard or a wing. So I think that's a great thought and a great possibility, because they're going to have to slow him down. You go back and look at Amari Williams' stat line in Knoxville, and it was pretty ridiculous. I mean, he had 15 points. I think it was 9 rebounds and a season-high 5 assists. And you mentioned that Kentucky made some tweaks with its offense with him kind of bringing the ball down the basketball floor. And that gave Tennessee a lot of issues defensively that we haven't really seen this season. So what adjustments is Tennessee going to make? I don't think Felix Okparo is the answer. As you were talking, I had flashbacks to him trying to defend Jamin Brakefield in Oxford on the perimeter and it not going well for him. I don't know that Felix does great out in the open floor. And then maybe that was just a bad night for him. But I do think he's better the closer you are to the rim. But Cade Phillips and Igor Milicic, I think, in defending Ansley Almanor and Amari Williams, who can, they're not your typical stretch four or stretch five, but they're also not your traditional big man in which they're just camped out under the basket. They're going to bring your post players further away from the basket, or at least they're able to. So I think it's going to fall on the shoulders of Cade Phillips and Igor Milicic Jr. to step out there and defend and be physical with those guys. I think they have the body types to do so, and they're going to have to, because, again, Ansley Almanor and Amari Williams, a lot of talk about the guard play, rightfully so, as we've already discussed, but those big men for Kentucky were a problem for Tennessee as well.
Well, Ben, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us today. It's going to be fun in the lead-up to Tennessee and Kentucky this week. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Y'all have a great week.
You as well. Ben McKee, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road from Go Vols 24/7. Going to be a lot of chatter between now and Friday about Tennessee and Kentucky coming up. We'll have the Rob rant coming up next. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
Him and Will Levis in the quarterback room next year, which is about as exciting as me walking out into traffic out there.
You have your own chicken, don't you?
Yeah.
That is the key. I think that's the key for all of us, is to get chickens. Can I have one of your chickens?
Hold on, I'll have to check.
Okay.
Okay, well, unlearn that.
I hope they don't do that to you, man.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check out it every morning. Either the Rob Rant or the Rex Rant. And Joe, we heard a clip there at the end of that little mashup from Keezer of UConn coach Dan Hurley coming off the floor last night after their loss to Florida. A nice, hard-fought 77-75 win for Florida over UConn, ending the run of back-to-back national championships for the Huskies. And Hurley's coming off the floor, and he's looking at Baylor, who's about to take the floor against Duke in the game after that, and starts screaming about the officials. And he dropped a couple F-bombs there, talking about basically he hopes that the officials don't screw Baylor the way that they just screwed UConn. I don't know, Joe. I watched some of that UConn-Florida game, particularly in the second half. Didn't feel like there was like some whistle against UConn in that game. So, I don't know. I guess he saw the game differently than I did. But the guy's weird. Dan Hurley's a weird dude, man. And he's obviously a really good coach. And, you know, there was conversation last offseason about him taking the job with the Lakers, which he ultimately turned down, and J.J. Redick ended up as head coach of the Lakers, and he stuck around at UConn. He's clearly a great coach, and he clearly has a good way of building rosters, connecting with his players, and he's won two national championships. So, like, you know, what he's doing obviously works, and they were right on the verge yesterday of taking down what may be the best team in the tournament in Florida. So I have a lot of respect for Dan Hurley as a coach, Joe. But him just flying off the handle, like, all the time, it gets a little old after a certain amount of time. Like, him just screaming about the officials for seemingly no reason coming off the court yesterday. He's out there screaming on the sideline. His assistant coaches are trying to tell him something, and he basically just tells them all to shut up on the sideline over there. He kind of seems borderline insane, and we saw some of that yesterday on full display from Dan Hurley.
You know, I mean, honestly, like, hold on one second.
I'm holding. There we go.
Sorry. Little teenage screaming going on here. What a nice dose of reality radio
a
there.
A nine-minute run.
Well, it's fitting with Dan Hurley.
Yeah, it actually went well together. Yeah, so it gets to the point where, like, if you're going to act after that game, and I don't know, I didn't watch his whole press conference because sometimes, like, you have that emotion in the moment. And I guess if he didn't bring it to the presser where he was talking about the officiating, I guess, you know, give him some credit for that. But, yeah, man, I can't think of a single controversial call. I mean, sure, there's some – I mean, every coach has, like, you know, you shouldn't have called that one on us. You should have called that one on them. The officiating was not the story of this game in any way. Not in any way. And yet he can't help himself. And at some point it becomes like you got to have a little bit of accountability.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, when you always do that, essentially you are transferring responsibility to other people. And although it was a great performance by his team yesterday, an overachieving performance, I said a championship performance, and Ricky Merritt got all mad at me on. But I'm like, they're not a good team. Like, they're an 8-9 team that is playing, like you said, maybe the best team in the tournament, and they had them. I mean, they had them up on them. Inside like 2 minutes left or two and change left, right? So it was a tremendous performance. But also, you know, this is a disappointing team. There were people talking about a three-peat with his team, and it's been underachieving all year. So at some point, it looks like you just can't, like, have accountability for your own failures. Then he's in the presser and he starts crying. I mean, again, like, hey, that was good, raw human emotion. He's got these seniors who are leaving who, look, didn't live up to it this year, but also gave him a great effort yesterday and stuck with it. But I'm with you. He is wound so tight, and he's such a beyond the ref stuff, man. Does he, like, crave talking trash to fans of other teams?
It's
too,
always,
you know?
Something,
you know, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's always something with him.
Which,
for sure.
Which, again, like, it's not always a bad thing. Like, I think we probably need more villains in sports, right? Like, we need more guys that people can latch onto and dislike. He's certainly that. Like, if you're not a UConn fan, like, you watch Dan Hurley on the sideline and coming off the floor when he's playing against your team, you're like, man, I can't stand that guy. So, like, I think that can be a good thing in sports. But, like, it doesn't really have to be every game, does it? Like, it just feel like there's always something with him where he's either yelling at somebody or he's complaining about something. And, again, he's a great coach, clearly a great coach. He just – I think after a long enough period of time of just seeing him do this over and over and over again, it starts to rub you the wrong way.
I think he is – no, I agree. And I think he is the most hated coach just by general other fan, possibly like going back to like Bobby Knight. I mean, like people hate Coach K just because he won all the time. You know, but like it's not the same thing. He for the most part, he didn't act like this, you know. People hate different people, Calipari, Pitino, whatever. But like as far as like just a guy who a polarizing figure who like the fans of the team love him, but everybody else just looks at him and says, this is just a complete jerk. I think that he may be the most or the biggest example of that in this sport since Bobby Knight's heyday at Indiana.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on all things Titans and Cam Ward. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.